Coming up on this episode of the Creepy Kingdom Movie Crypt, we reveal the creepiest film of 2018. Hello and welcome to the Creepy Kingdom Movie Crypt, Creepy Kingdom's podcast focusing on the spooky side of films. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II, and I'm excited because we have a fun episode coming up. It is the results that you, the listeners, got to vote on for the creepiest film of 2018, an annual tradition here at Creepy Kingdom. Right before the Oscars, we reveal the creepiest film of the year, as voted on by you. But before we get to that, I do have to let you guys know that we have a very fun new podcast coming next week. We've been hyping it for a few months, but it's finally about to go down. Now, this is a Patreon exclusive, so if you're one of our patrons, you will get it. If not, just as little as $1, you can get to it. And the reason that it is a Patreon exclusive show is because we discuss things that we would never discuss on a regular Creepy Kingdom podcast. This show is uncensored, and we talk about things that's just outside of the safe realm a little bit here. And it's a very fun show. Our first episode, we talk about things that you can do to get banned from theme parks. We reflect on our time being in the documentary Dark Side of Disney. Roxy reveals some things she may or may not have done in her youth at theme parks. And we even reveal some information that Roxy has about the person who has been recently banned from Walt Disney World and Disneyland for putting up political banners inside the parks. Name of the show is Live from the Dungeon. It's uncensored and it gets a little crazy, and look out for that next week. But for now, it's time for the show to begin. Hey, I am joined here by Sir Florida Man himself, Grant.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back.
And we are very excited because we are here to bring the results of the vote. That's right. The Creepy Kingdom followers and listeners got to vote for what was the creepiest film of 2018. Shannon's yelling Hereditary in the background, but we're she's jumping the gun there. We literally just started the show. We haven't even announced the nominees, which we're not going to announce, actually, because we're going to reveal them in order of the votes. But
this is the only award show that matters.
The only one.
Kids.
Like,
the only one.
We did time it up for the Oscars, as we did last year, and Grant pointed out before we started that we did this literally a year ago today. We recorded it exactly 1 year ago on the same day.
Magic can happen.
Yeah. I mean, it was meant to be. So in case you didn't see on social media, we put out a vote earlier in the week. It says, you know, we had our list of nominees from 2018 and put out a vote, and the results this year are very interesting.
Yeah, I'm taking a look at these right now myself, and I don't know. I don't think there's enough good taste going on here necessarily.
I don't know. Well, the one thing to keep in mind is that you could only vote for one film. So while they may have voted for one, they probably, that doesn't mean they didn't like others. It's just which one they want the most, you know? So it doesn't mean they don't like the other films, but.
It's like Disney and Universal, you know, you may prefer going to one or the other, but that doesn't mean you can't love them both.
Right. Of course. You know, I like doing them both, but this is not a theme park show. This is the movie crypt. So we got to stay on brand here and just talk about Le Cinema. And what's interesting about this episode, this segment or whatever, is that it really started where every year we'd go through all the Disney films that were released in the year and give our thoughts on them. And that was mostly when the show was very Disney focused. But I've decided, we decided a few years ago, I think this is the third year that we're doing this vote, that we're going to branch out and just... We're going to, crown the creepiest film, according to our listeners. But
I mean, we still love Disney very, very much. But unfortunately, this was a year that Disney just didn't really release that much as far as
not a lot of
creepy Kingdom eligible stuff. It was a lot of Ralph
creepy.
Breaks the Internet and Incredibles 2 and stuff. Things that were very well received by the public, but they don't really fit the mold of the show.
Exactly. But so I wanted to just take a moment and actually say publicly that I've thoroughly enjoyed most of the films Disney released this year. Incredibles 2 was actually my favorite film of the year, like independent of Disney. Like, I absolutely loved it. I loved everything about it. I've heard some people put some criticism about it, and I actually gave it 5 stars, like 5 out of 5. Like, I loved it. Ralph Briggs, before you jump ahead, what did you think of Incredibles 2?
I gave it like a 2.5 out of 5. To me, it was really? Just kind of it was very slow. But then again, those characters have never really connected to me the way that they seem to connect to the masses.
I was not a huge fan of the first one. I was like, it's like, oh, that was cool. So it has nothing to do with the characters. Like, I actually just literally love everything that film brought to the table. And actually, there is some kind of creepy parts. I love the villain in it. And the crazy strobe effects they had to put warnings on for people with epilepsy. And I love the Tom and Jerry, like, Looney Tunes, like, cartoon antics in the movie. Like, I just really loved everything about it.
I love the fact that there was no 23-minute long Frozen short before it.
Yeah, that was short. No, that wasn't a short film. That was rough. Before Coco, that was
right before Coco. Yeah, that was a rough one.
A little brutal. So anyways, and Ralph Breaks the Internet was a great film. There's nothing really creepy about that to be nominated on here, but I absolutely love that. And another film that Disney put out that I just left feeling so happy and full of joy, and which really has nothing creepy in it whatsoever, was Mary Poppins. I absolutely loved that as well. So, or Mary Poppins.
Oh, I love Mary Poppins. I thought that, a lot of people are trashing it, or they're saying that it's not as good. And I will agree that the music, there's not really a lot of memorable music, but yeah, the movie still left me feeling very good inside.
Well, I like the songs from there. I like the fact that, like, you know what? We're just going to do our own thing. We're not going to rehash old songs. You can't mess with the Sherman Brothers classic songs. And I like some of the songs in there a lot. Some of them ended up like, in regular rotation in my musical habits, which is not. I don't listen to musicals or show tunes at all, so it's very jarring. You know,
and they use the guy from Hamilton and they let him do what he does best, which is his, his rap type thing. And I guess the only creepy part about Mary Poppins was maybe the animated villain, the little kidnapping scene.
Yeah, it got a little dark, but barely. But that scene was incredible, too.
3 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, that animation sequel was absolutely incredible. I loved it. I can't wait for it to come out on home video or whatever they call it these days to watch it again. So Disney, the quality was high from Disney, for sure, in my opinion.
Except for there's one movie I'm looking at the list, and it wasn't on this list, so I can talk about it. But A Wrinkle in Time was also Disney. I feel like that was a major miss.
Yeah, that was a miss. There was a few things I liked about it, but Yeah, that was a little bit of a miss, but overall, I just thought it was a solid year. You know, they seem to get some quality filmmakers in the mix there, even films that people didn't seem to support or like a lot, like the Solo movie. I thought was still a fun movie to watch. You know,
I enjoyed Solo. I think there was a lot of hate because he wasn't Harrison Ford, and I don't know. I actually enjoyed it more than I thought I would.
Yeah, and other than that, there is one Disney film that ended up on this list we'll be getting to in a minute.
Oh, jeez. Okay, yeah.
But, Winnie the Pooh I actually liked as well. It was a solid year.
Christopher Robin was so much fun.
Yeah, yeah. Now, like, there's a parts of that film that got kind of dark, you know, and I think I even wrote about it in my review that when I reviewed it, but it's not creepy. I mean, you might say it's creepy to have inanimate objects talking and all that stuff, but that's taking it way out of context.
It didn't do as well as I think it did, because I don't think most kids really care about, you know, like when kids say, oh, I want to go to a movie, they say, oh, you know what? I want to go and see the movie about a man having a midlife crisis.
I mean, I guess it was more of that than Winnie the Pooh's adventures or whatever. I don't know. Whatever. But those are my thoughts on the Disney films of the year. I'm trying to think, and just as far as like animation goes, things that are not on this list that I thought was great was Into the Spider-Verse, which is nominated for Best Picture Oscar, which I think should probably win. Did you see that one?
I was surprised how much I liked that, in all honesty. I thought, by the way, okay, so just for context, last year I had MoviePass, so I saw pretty much everything. And then when MoviePass went kaput, rest in peace, MoviePass, I did AMC Stubs, where for $20 a month you can see 3 movies a week.
Yeah.
So I was seeing things. And as you'll soon find out that, you know, I didn't feel guilty if I stayed in a movie for about 45 minutes and I didn't like it, leaving it.
Because you walked out on movies. Wow.
So we may get to that. We may or may not get to one or two of those today.
I've never walked out of a movie ever, no matter what. But that's interesting. I have that as well.
I only get so much free time. So if it's a point where, like, you know, if I'm not really feeling the movie and I know I could be at home, like, clearing off my DVR or playing some video games or doing whatever errands I have to do before work, I sometimes will choose that over that and go, you know what, this movie's a bust. I don't care how it's going. And, yeah, we'll get into that in a little bit, perhaps.
Interesting, interesting. All right. Well, you know, a lot of films, Grant's over there in Florida, but I'm out here in Hollywood where the press gets allowed to go to screenings to review the film. So most of these films that I've seen here were at press screenings throughout the year. I feel I have an accomplishment, probably the first time in my life, that this calendar year I saw every single Disney film in the theater. So I was like, not all of them were press screenings. A few of them I actually just went to this. I didn't go to the press screening. Someone else from Creepy Kingdom did. So, but I still was like, every movie, Marvel, Lucasfilm, Pixar. what was the Pixar movie this year? Did they release one?
I'm drawing. It was Incredibles. We were just talking about Incredibles. James dusted off his wallet and, you know, blew the cobwebs off of it.
Yeah. And actually, funny enough, we went to the movies tonight, as civilians. And usually we're going to press screenings, but actually went to go see Alita: Battle Angel tonight. So I feel like
I haven't seen it. Was it good?
I really enjoyed it. My expectations were that it would be above average, and it met that expectation. There are some great fight scenes in it and pretty solid story. It also seems like there's a lot of little setting up world building for more films, which is kind of on brand for James Cameron.
Which is also definitely not going to happen because this movie is not doing very well.
It's James Cameron.
But I'm saying it's $200 million budget or something like that, and it's not doing very well, although Asia does well with his stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, James Cameron doesn't need – he could just make whatever movies he wants. He doesn't need permission. He's got the money to do it. He's making – what is it? There's four Avatar sequels, in the works? Is that what it is?
And we mentioned this on the last podcast, actually, that you and I recorded, where they said, hey, they just wrapped up production. And sure enough, they actually did wrap up production in December of all four Avatar movies. They shot them all back-to-back.
Wow, so I don't think anybody's asking for those, and he made those, so he can make whatever movie he wants. I don't even think fans of Avatar are like, oh, give me four more. I'm really interested to see how these are. Of course, we are, just to check them out, but I don't know.
The only thing I think that would be good about four more Avatar movies would be more ride potentials for Animal Kingdom.
Right, but isn't the context of the rides based on the newer, the unreleased films? Because it obviously has nothing to do with the film that we saw.
No, not at all.
Yeah. So so maybe at least the land will make more sense after the new movies. I don't know. Anyways, all right. Well, let's get to revealing the list here. It is a very interesting list. Because of the percentages here are insane, very insane. I don't know. I'll just start it off here, I guess here, and say that the number 10 and 9 spot are tied with 0%. These two films had 0 votes, and I have some opinions on why that probably is.
Oh yeah.
The first one is a film, Overlord, and my first thought on that is that I don't think a lot of people have seen this movie because it was really buried. The studio that released it almost seemed like they didn't want anyone to see it at all. Like they tried to bury it. I didn't really hear about it that much, and then when I saw it, I was like, wow, this movie is awesome. This is like a hidden gem. Like it was literally hidden because I barely even knew about it. That's where I saw it. And it's a J.J. Abrams produced zombie horror film set during the Second World War. And it is. I think more people need to see it. I think it's a really awesome film. It's super gory. It's intense, but it's also fun. And all that stuff. So what did you think of Overlord?
Oh my God, that was an amazing movie. I didn't really know. I knew it was a J.J. Abrams thing and that I had a horror bent, but I didn't realize how balls to the wall action that this was going to be and how crazy of a movie. I don't think there were even any really big stars in it, but it definitely got buried. Even I saw it opening weekend, and it was in one of the smallest screens in the theater. Wow. There's like two theaters at the theater I go to that have room for maybe 50, 60 seats. It's just one of those we'll put whatever little independent movie is on here, and
right.
And it was put in that, and I know two other people who saw this movie, and that's it. And most people hadn't even heard of it. And the people who saw it absolutely adored it.
Yeah, I will say this. I don't know when it's over, but currently there's a chance to win a Blu-ray copy of Overlord from our sister website, Nightmarish Conjurings. And also, on top of that, in the commercial for this film that was on television, Nightmarish Conjurings was quoted as one of the... I forget what the quote was, but it's actually in the commercial. So we were really excited to be on a national spot like that as Nightmarish Conjurings. But So yeah, go to Nightmarish Conjuring social media and enter the contest. Check it out. I mean, it's definitely a hidden gem, and that's why I think there nobody voted for it, because I don't think many people have seen it.
So, if you love blood and violence and Nazis, this is the
movie. If you love Nazis.
No. Sorry, well, that was phrased awfully.
Yeah, that was, yeah, a little bit.
If you love blood and gore and revenge on Nazis, I should say, is the correct word. This is the movie for you. Yeah, this is a little intense and unlike anything else that you'd ever seen.
Yeah. And when I say zombies, it's not like zombies like you're used to seeing them. They're reanimated corpses with this serum. So they are brought back from the dead, but it's not, you know, The Walking Dead or anything like that. Whatever. I think we've pitched this movie enough, but
I'd also like to say that the opening scene where they're, and this isn't like a spoiler or anything, but they're all on the plane getting ready to deploy. And it's all the soldiers getting ready to jump out of the plane into Germany. You feel like you are in that plane with these people.
That is one of the most incredible.
It was so intense.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's right from the start, and it was one of the way that was shot and the edited and the sound design, and you know, like, it was intense, you know, and it's probably one of the best like war. Like scenes from like a World War II movie, like, ever, even though it was, you know, the movie's obviously fictional in its storyline. But that was like, the movie just slaps you in the face right from the first scene.
And I mean, I feel like if more people had seen this, then this would probably be in the number two or three spot for creepiest film. Probably the number three spot for creepiest film of the year, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I agree. I thought I was expecting to have some more votes, not zero. But what are you going to do?
Which is insane, because 10,000 people voted.
Yeah, that is insane. Out of the 10,000 people that voted, nobody voted for this. All right, well, the other film that was tied at this with zero votes was another film that I think was released and intentionally buried as well by the studio that released it. And that was The Nutcracker and the Four Realms. So I'll let you go first here. What were your thoughts on this film?
So remember how I told you that sometimes if I figure out that I'd rather be like cleaning the house?
Really? You bailed on this one.
I bailed after 45 minutes. I just could not take this movie any longer. I thought it was just super boring. And unfortunately, I'm going to kind of just go off for a second, if you don't mind. I know I'm personally kind of a little tired of the fact that there's just not – it seems like all the movies that Disney is putting out are going to be like live-action remakes. Like, we're getting Dumbo this year, and we're getting The Lion King, and they're working on what else are they working on right now? They're working on something else.
There's Aladdin
coming out. There's three this year.
This year, but this film doesn't fall into those.
No. Where I was going to go with this is – it seems like Disney is running out of originality, and then they come up with an original idea and they give us this, and it's terrible. And you can't blame Bob Iger for like looking going, okay, well, let's try to do a live action version of the Aristocats, because that will sell. And you know, it's just like, it's hard because I want to support the ideas of original concepts for Disney and not rehashing the same stories over and over. But yet when they release stuff like this as a tentpole movie, quote unquote, because the media blitz was huge, from what I
got to strongly disagree with you about that. I feel like this movie was totally they're trying to bury it. I'll tell you why. I don't know if there's like some like, there was like a lot of promotion around Walt Disney World for it or something. Well, ironically, I was at I was in Orlando right before it came out, so I don't remember seeing any promotion for it at all.
Hollywood Studios had a few things, like as her little billboards that they have inside, on the back of like the Chinese theater there. And so
I didn't even notice while I was there. So I was just this minor, you know, stuff they always do when a new movie's coming out. But this film came out like November 1st or 2nd or something, like, and this is a Christmas movie. It does so much. It takes place at Christmas. Obviously, it's the Nutcracker. Like, it is totally like, this is a film for Christmas, and they're like, just put it right after Halloween, and no one will care about it anyways, because Ralph Breaks Internet's coming out in a few weeks. I mean, that was like, they just, I don't think they even wanted to release this movie. Like, they just totally are like, well, I guess we better put it out. Well, I don't share your thoughts on it. I liked it. I didn't love it, but I liked it. I liked, I thought there were some fun, creepy parts in it. There's, you know, the lady in the realm with the rats. I liked the toy soldiers were really creepy. Did you make it that far? Did you see the life-size toy soldiers?
I saw the lady made out of rats on how, like, it was a bunch of rats as one, and that was kind of neat, but I did not see the toy soldiers.
They were pretty creepy. They were like, you know, life-size, emotionless tin soldiers. The story wasn't the strongest. I like the visuals. I like the ballet dancing in the film. I liked it. I don't know, man. I've definitely seen worse movies. But I went into it pretty neutral, neutral expectations. You know, I wasn't really expecting to be blown away. It kind of already looks like, you know, like the Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland over CG extravaganza. And that's exactly what it was. So I wasn't disappointed with that. I like the costumes in it. I just straight up liked the movie, Grant. I don't know what to tell you.
Do you feel like it was maybe like you're talking about like these over the top CGI, like on how it was a CGI, bonanza.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like this was almost like a practice movie so they can say, okay, well, we're releasing this movie coming up in the future that we know is going to be awesome, so we want to like perfect the CGI, so like you do like a practice movie. Like, we're gonna try some new effects and stuff.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I don't think the story was the strongest, you know, so I could see that. I don't really know the backstory of why this movie was made or who made it or why they made it, or I don't remember recognizing who the director was or anything like that whatsoever. And like I said, it was totally buried, man. Like, it was like that was out of theaters fast. Like that.
Oh yeah.
Like, and like I said, the fact that they squeezed that in there, like weeks before Ralph Breaks the Internet, they didn't even want to give it a chance.
No, not at all. And I guarantee, I'm pulling it up, and I will bet you that this thing probably tanked beyond all belief.
Oh, I'm sure it did. Like I said, they totally buried it, and I don't think it's that bad. I don't think it's walkout bad. I'm not going to sit there and say like I'm championing for it, like it's the greatest film of the year. But
box office budget $120 million.
Wow.
In the USA, it made $54 million. Worldwide, $173 million. But they're still in the red because, a movie has to make like three times what the actual production cost is to be profitable, quote unquote, from what I've heard.
Yeah. You know,
it's all the marketing and stuff like that. But man, tough.
Every time I hear
it came out
like,
November 4th, nobody's in the mood for that.
That's what I'm saying. No, it's a Christmas movie, straight up. It takes place at Christmas. It's the Nutcracker. Like, they, you know, but obviously they had Mary Poppins as their Christmas movie. I'm trying to think what came out before this from Disney. What was the film they released before this? Was it Christopher Robin?
Yeah, and that like you, and that didn't do that well as well. You know, it's kind of like the three. Not like, I don't know, there are three that were kind of like quote unquote original concepts. I mean, A Wrinkle in Time is not an original idea, but it's not based on an existing Disney IP. And even Christopher Robin was a new take on something. Yeah. These were all movies that did just, they didn't do what they thought they would do.
Yeah, but at the same time, then you got stuff like, you know, Infinity Wars, which, you know, breaks box office records. So Disney's doing just fine.
And the Ant-Man and the Wasp and all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't, you know. So, but with that, you know, on the subject of live action, then we're moving away from Disney because there's no more Disney films on this list. You know, these are just sure bets. You know, if they want to keep making these sure bet live action films so that they can actually like experiment and have a film that might not do well but still take a chance, I don't have a problem with that.
And can you blame them if you were in their position when you say, huh, I can make $400 million off of a movie for a cost of $150 million? You'd be like, yeah, sure, sign me up for that one. Yeah,
right. I mean, yeah, it's a sure thing. And I don't like the idea of remaking all the animated films and live actions, but I take each film with, you know, as it comes. And the films I've been pretty high quality. I've enjoyed them all the live action remakes. I can't think of one I didn't. So
although I do think that the Lion King one is going to be, that's kind of the one I'm questioning, because there's no human actors in that at all. So it's not really, it's just like a different version of the animated movie versus right. live action, quote unquote. It's just super realistic rendered backgrounds and characters.
Well, they have some new actors portraying the characters, which might be interesting, but I don't really care that much because The Lion King is not really high on my favorite movies. So,
you know, a very, very, very quick Lion King tangent is I really hope that they get to the reason why Mufasa is just such a jerk to the hyenas. Like, the hyenas are seen as just being like terrible Scar's lackeys, but man, Mufasa had completely banished them to the elephant graveyard. If you were a hyena, you'd be like, you know what, this lion, he wants to take over and he's going to let us eat and walk in the sunlight. Who would you join if you were a hyena?
Well, that's definitely a topic for another time, so we're going to move
Mufasa
on.
Mufasa is a racist toward hyenas.
Obviously. All right, moving on, yes. Since Lion King's not on our list. And, we're gonna
next
move
year
on.
It will be, though, I'm sure.
We'll see if it's creepy. Yeah, so the next slots is another tie. It's a four-way tie for 5, 6, 7, and 8. These next four films all got 2.13% of the vote.
Ooh.
And yeah, so we're gonna try to fly through these a little bit here, because I feel like some of these you could go off or have their own podcasts. I'm just gonna go in order here, alphabetical order, I mean, since they're all tied. So the first one here, Fantastic Beasts: The Crimes of Grindelwald. I'll start my thoughts on this film. This film was my first impression of this left me with more questions than answers. This seems like a setup film for more films, and it didn't really stand on its own. There's some cool parts to it, and of course, it's always exciting to be back in the Wizarding World, but you know, I think a lot of us fans were left just a little confused. Some of the decisions and choices and things are going on in this film. I thought the first Fantastic Beasts was very enjoyable. And so this was not the follow-up that we all wanted. And we're starting to worry, we collectively, as Harry Potter fans, is J.K. Rowling get a little bit of the George Lucas syndrome where nobody can, she doesn't have to answer anybody, so nobody can tell her nothing. So I don't know. What were your thoughts on The Crimes of Grindelwald?
I was so excited for this movie, and I was just kind of like left like, okay, well, that happened. I really didn't feel like, I can't even remember the plot, honestly, and I just saw it a few months ago. In the movie, I was still wondering, what exactly is the plot of this movie? It was super slow moving. It felt like it had undone all the fun. Like the first one was so much fun. And then this one felt like they had, like, immediately they undid everything. Like, I'm trying to think. I can't remember the names of the character, but the one guy who was the muggle who was in love with
The baker,
with one of the witches. Yeah, like the whole thing was like a whole, you were thinking, oh, are they going to get back together? Are they not? And like, you don't see any of how any of this happens. You just kind of hear about it. It's like a passing line. You don't get any of the things that you would want out of this movie. And it just really felt like this is a movie that is setting up everything else. But the problem with it was that it was just so, I'm going to say, boring, you know, like not much really happened. There was no fun in it compared to the first one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel as strong as you, but I thought there was a few scenes that were fun. But overall, like I said, it just seemed like setup. You know, it's just like so much setup. And it's like, I don't really need to see a 2.5 hour movie of setup.
Yeah, because the question is, are you going to be able to pull all of this off and wrap this up as, you know, with a nice little bow in the next, you know, one or two movies or however many they're going to do?
They're supposed to do five. Yeah. But this movie, I think, was disappointing not only critically but also financially. So I don't really know what the future holds for the franchise, Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm still gonna go see it or whatever, of course, but you know, it kind of makes me feel like Order of the Phoenix is probably my least favorite Harry Potter movie because it's all about setup, you know, and it left me with that feeling again, you know.
It's the same way for me with the Two Towers in Lord of the Rings. You know, like the first one is like kind of like a crazy, like, let's start the adventure and like a little bit of Dungeons and Dragons type action of going into the going through the caves and fighting things. And then the second one is all set up for the third act, Return of the King. This is this one's, you know, Two Towers pretty much.
So we'll see. But and at least Niffler fans were happy because there was way more Nifflers in it than Shannon, yeah. My girlfriend loves Nifflers, and there was more Niffler toys to be bought. They're all around our home. So
yeah, I felt like Niffler was definitely underutilized.
Well, I just meant there was more Nifflers. There was a whole bunch of them, so they made more merchandise, and now they're at my house.
we want a Niffler spinoff movie.
Like, wow.
Niffler meets Scrooge McDuck.
That's a crossover.
You would just go into the money bin and just take everything.
Stealing those coins in case you haven't seen them. All right, moving on to our next one. This was the reimagining or the remake or the whatever, the sequel. I don't know what you want to call it, but it was Halloween, the 2018 version of it. So
definitely a sequel. Think?
Yeah, it is a sequel, but the premise of it erases all the other sequels. It's just a sequel to the original film, and that they called the same thing. Like, I don't know why, but they did. Your turn to go first, I guess. What do you think about Halloween 2018?
Well, I mean, I guess that's a better name than Halloween H2O.
I thought that was
a stupid freaking name right there. I felt like it was okay. I will say that when I was a child, there were, you know, three big boogeyman characters, you know, Freddy Krueger and Jason Voorhees and Michael Myers. And for me, Michael Myers was always on the bottom of the list because him and Jason are kind of interchangeable in a way. If you think about it, they're just big hulks who just smash through things.
But they have similarities, but there's little differences there because Jason actually has like a real solid backstory.
And Michael Myers is just like, you know, just I am the murderer. I will say he is very strong for like a 60, 70 year old dude.
Oh, at this point, yeah.
It was okay. Yeah. I'm glad that Jamie Lee Curtis was getting work and she did a very good job in it. I thought the route of her being like a doomsday prepper was kind of a neat idea, or not like a doomsday prepper, but just like on how this had basically, like, this kind of trauma had really pushed her beyond the brink of what a sane person would be.
Right. You know, that so was thought, that was an interesting take for sure, and I'll agree with you there. I was,
and there was one good shot that I loved where it was like a one, like it's a continuous shot, and you see Michael Myers going on a rampage, and that was kind of a neat idea. But the rest of it was just kind of, I don't know, it just didn't feel I don't know, it didn't seem like it had a lot of magic to it.
Well, I pretty much agree with you, so we're not going to be battling on this one. I'm not like the, that's not like my favorite thing. I was very interested in this film. I thought it was interesting that Danny McBride was one of the writers. You know, I was really interested to see what's his take on horror. You know, being the funny, you know, person he is. I don't really know how he is as a writer, but well, yeah. I mean, I love Eastbound and Down, his HBO show. I love Kenny Powers as a character. You know, and all that kind of stuff.
Vice Principals.
Yeah, well, I actually never watched that one, but I, you know, I'm just
to yourself to see that.
Yeah, it's like looks like a continuation of Eastbound and Down. But anyway, so I was you know, I was glad Jamie Lee Curtis is back, all this kind of stuff, and you know, and most people seem to be really happy with this film. Like, it's really been really well received. Everyone loves it. I was kind of like, this is like not good at all. Like just as, even as a movie, like it just didn't hit with me at all. The only thing I liked about it was really Jamie Lee Curtis, like being this older gray haired woman packing heat. You know, like I enjoyed
having eating Activia yogurt.
Eating Activia yogurt. I like the little booby traps she set up around her house, and you know, and I like the idea that the trauma that happened to her as a teenager made her go a little crazy. I thought that was a really interesting idea that just kind of wasted, really, because the film just did not work for me at all.
She was more compelling to me than Michael Myers. Like, I was more interested in her being on the screen than him. And, you know, I kind of felt like the movie definitely lagged when she was off and they were focusing on tertiary characters.
Yeah, I mean, just the whole other parts of the movie were just not really even that interesting, to be honest. I don't even really remember them. Like, the whole, like, I don't know, I just didn't work, but
yeah,
we're wrong because everyone loves it. So, anyways, well, not everyone, because only got 2.3% or 2.13% of the vote. The next film here, in this 4-way tie, is the film Hellfest. Now, wait, whose turn is it to go first? I don't remember.
It's your turn.
My turn. Great, sweet. I'm gonna tread a little lightly on this one. And say that I wasn't the biggest fan of the story. Okay, all right. But, and in case you're unfamiliar with this film, because it's obviously not as popular as other franchise, it's about a group of kids that are being stalked by a serial killer when they go to a series of haunts. So the idea, especially us being haunt enthusiasts, is a really fun idea. But I had some issues with the story and things that happened in there, and it didn't really work for me either. But again, it was pretty well received. But the thing that I absolutely loved about the movie, and I'm not just saying this, as I'll explain why, that was incredible, was the set design for these haunts. The set design in this movie is some of the best I have ever seen. And the reason why you may think that I'm, you know, not being sincere, is that you and I actually know the set designer of this film, Grant. I don't know if you knew that. But
who could it be? Who was the set designer of this movie?
It was a fellow Foolish Mortals participant by the name of Nick.
Oh, really?
Yes, he is the set designer. Nick Morgan of Hellfest.
All right. Well, you know what? I have a different opinion from you, James. I really enjoyed the movie.
Oh, well, there you go.
There we go. I thought it was kind of a clever idea. My only major problem is, and I'm not going to, I'm trying to avoid all spoilers, but I felt like the ending was just kind of like tacked on.
I really didn't like the ending, but that's somewhere where Shannon, she enjoyed the film, and then she said she really liked the ending. So we just were like not on the same page with this film at all. But she agreed with the set design, of course. But
it was a lot of fun, and I really wanted to go to those haunts.
Oh yeah, no, those haunts were incredible. Like, I did not know before I watched the movie that he was a set designer either. I wasn't like going into it knowing that. But I found out shortly after, probably, like, and I was like, wow. Good job,
dude. I thought
dude.
It was just a fun movie.
There is fun to it, but I don't know. I just didn't really buy it, really. It never sold it for me. But I mean, it's clearly set up for sequels. So,
oh god, yeah.
I'm interested. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah.
All right, and the fourth one here, The House with the Clock in Its Walls.
Am I taking this one, or are you taking this one?
Well, I think you're up to bat now, right? Yep.
Okay, so of all the movies that were on the list to pick from, this was my favorite creepy movie of the year.
Oh, this is the one that you voted for?
This is the one that I voted for. I voted for The House with the Clock in Its Walls. I thought that this was a criminally underrated movie with and I thought Jack Black did a phenomenal job in this role, as this role, where he was still kind of his goofy Jack Black self, but there was more of a layer, more layers to him than just goofball. And man, there are some creepy moments of this. This reminded me of the best creepy films from my decade of the 80s. Like kind of like a lot of that kind of mystery and wonder.
What kind of films in particular are you thinking of that it's reminiscent
I'm going to go with stuff like it kind of had some elements of like Goonies and Neverending Story, stuff like that.
Okay, yeah, for sure.
But like the adventure, and then, you know, like you get to something and it's a little more sinister than, you know, you're expecting it to be.
I think out of pretty much every film on this list, this is the most creepy Kingdom film.
Oh,
for
God,
sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a family-friendly horror film, you know, because you know, it does have that 80s heart to it as well. I mean, not that I'm jumping in on my thoughts, but that's one thing about it.
There's a lot of magic to it as well. There's like it's perfect for all ages, and it would have it done well, it would have made a great theme park attraction.
Yeah, I mean it's not a Disney film, obviously.
That's why I said theme park. So yeah. You know, some place in like Dubai or Singapore or someplace, you know, they could do like a Haunted Mansion style thing going through the house with the clock on its walls.
That'd be cool. I mean, this is based on books, right?
I want to say there's like a there's several
more
of them.
Yeah, there's more of them. So, you know, I don't think it bombed, did it? I know it wasn't a blockbuster, but I think it did okay, right?
I think it did okay, but probably not okay enough to warrant the further adventures.
Oh, you don't think a sequel's coming?
I don't think it will be.
I don't know. I mean, I thought the which didn't make our list at all, the Hotel Transylvania film was pretty horrible, but people seem to love those and they keep making those movies. So, so I'm just thinking of something similar that hits with people.
Oh yeah, and let's talk about the fact that it's an Eli Roth movie.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that he directed this. It was like out of nowhere. Like I didn't even realize until the movie was over.
Well, because he has kids now, and I think he probably wanted to make something for his kids.
He did a great job. That's a good thing to point out. You know, from having a nice family friendly horror movie.
Well, it had a $42 million budget, and it made $68 million in the U.S. and $131 worldwide.
Well, 42 is probably, yeah, that's okay. I mean, 42 is actually pretty low if I had to guess what the budget was. So they really made it look great because there's a lot of crazy effects in this movie.
There's a lot of CGI. So I would actually, apparently Eli Roth does have a sequel like written and ready to go in the event. So I'm hoping, yeah, but that's my creepy movie on that list of the year.
Wow. Yeah. And, yeah, I like it. It was not my pick, but I want to see more. And just the scene where all the little dolls and stuff come to life. I mean, that's nightmare fuel right there.
Yeah.
All right. So now we have our top four. No more ties. But you'll still see as we say these percentages that the top films are winners by a landslide. Like these are really loved films by many
people.
You'll
never guess what they are.
Well, I mean, if you remember the nominees, you might know what's left, but who knows? Why would you? Don't ruin the fun. Just stick along with us. So
yeah, no, of course, it's.
All right, so let's get to number four, with 4.26% of the vote. Still pretty low percentage, but and this film is Winchester. So, I take it that means you don't like this movie.
Well, this is your turn to talk.
It's my turn to talk. I thought this movie was good. I mean, everybody has seen it doesn't like it. And I was like, I don't know. Like, Helen Mirren could, like, read the phone book, and I'm in. Like, Helen Mirren is, like, pretty awesome. I also want to point out, maybe I was just caught up in the magic of the evening, but I did attend a press screening of this, and for some random reason Helen Mirren was there.
Oh wow.
And yeah, so I was in the presence of Helen Mirren, and the cast don't usually show up at press screenings, so I don't really know what that was about. Actually was it a press? No, it wasn't a press screening. It was like a fan preview screening. That's what it was. But I remember this before the movie came out. But we went there as press. That's how we got into it. But anyway, she was there. She didn't like introduce me or anything. She just like did some photo ops, and then she probably didn't even watch the movie. But and then she took off. But I think the story that it's based on, the Winchester Mystery House, and that she kept building the house, and it was a house built on the profits from guns in the 1800s, and the ghost like spooky imagery in the film, I just found it enjoyable overall. Like I said, I think I'm probably alone on that. I don't know anyone else that's seen it that will join it, but 4% of our listeners enjoyed it. That's a creepy movie. So I like it. I would even watch it again. That's I think I probably gave it 4 stars or maybe 3.5, something like that. I don't know. So what was your issues with Winchester?
Okay, so clearly these people never saw The House of the Clock in its Walls or Overlord. Well, I don't know. I just kind of felt like
those films are better than Winchester, yes. I'll agree with you.
I just felt like I don't know. I feel like it was released at the wrong time. I'll put it that way. Like I think I want to say it came out in what, January or February or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it was really early in the year. Yeah,
it was. And
that's like
unfortunately,
that's like a
lot of movies.
Yeah, you could bury it time. Yeah,
I felt like it was just kind of it was very slow moving.
I've seen slower.
I don't know. I've been to the actual Winchester Mystery House, and it wasn't my cup of tea. I just felt like it was.
What the actual
very
house
bland.
Is not your cup of tea, or
the actual house is awesome.
Oh, okay.
I felt like Helen Mirren did a really good job, but for the most part, I kind of felt it didn't feel super original to me. I think that was the problem. Although I guess I did kind of like the fact that it was kind of it skirted the line of, is this real or is this fake?
Right, because you know, like, it's supposed to, the film is based on the true story, but then they throw right. in supernatural elements and present it as fact, right? So I guess that kind of, you're like, what's the real part of this story? You know?
Did Shannon like it?
No, she didn't like it.
Okay, so yeah, I mean.
And we haven't really even... I don't even remember why. I mean, it was a year ago that we saw it. But
and that's the thing. It's like, I can't even remember really why. It was just one of those movies that I finished it. I left and I probably didn't even think about it again until I saw the list.
Well.
A super forgettable movie to me.
Well, I said, I kind of want to watch it again because it's been a year and I enjoyed some of the scenes. So, yeah, there's that. Winchester. Some okay. people like that. You know, you've always got creepy. It is creepy. It might not be the best movie of the year. It certainly is creepy, and that's what this vote is all about. All right, let's move on to number three, bringing in 8.51% of the vote is The Nun.
Ooh.
So this all is right. the one film that Grant and I have not seen on this list.
Although I've heard Sally Field does a great job when flying in this movie.
Interesting.
Yeah, the fly. No. There was an old show called The Flying Nun.
Oh, whatever, man. All right, Flying Nun. Like
the 70s.
I was like, Sally. I don't recall Sally Field being in this film, but who knows? Everyone comes. They're going to come back these days.
You know, your audience that's in the 60s and 70s are going to like find that joke hysterical.
Yeah, we have a lot of our listeners in that age group.
Flying Nun on the podcast.
For sure. They love it. Really great in that age range. A big lot of fans in that age range. Anyways, I'm just going to resort to Shannon. This is part of the Conjuring universe. Shannon is a huge fan of the Conjuring universe. I'd say I like some of this stuff. Some I didn't like in the Conjuring universe. So I'm neutral. And she liked it. We don't have anything to say about The Nun. So I don't know. It's the only one I haven't seen. But it warranted being nominated because it got the number three spot.
All right.
So I guess we can move on to number two. So we got nothing to say about The Nun. All right. It's getting tense in here. Now the percentage start bumping up a bit here. Taking the number two spot with 29.79% of the vote.
Ooh.
That's a big jump from 8.51. 29, almost 30% would be A Quiet Place.
Yeah.
So is it, I don't know, I keep losing track whose turn it is to start.
Well, I don't know. The last time was The Nun, but none of us really had anything to say about The Nun. So, I enjoyed A Quiet Place way more than I thought I would. Because the commercials made it look kind of hokey.
It's pretty hard to relay the feeling of watching A Quiet Place into a commercial.
Exactly. And, you know, I really feel like I saw it in the theater, absolutely loved it. I feel like if I watched it at home, I wouldn't care about it as much.
Interesting.
Because of... distractions. Like there's something about being in a movie all about not talking. And although I would like to yell publicly at the person who was texting and talking on the phone in the movie The Quiet Place.
Wow.
Over at the theater near me, but because that kind of ruins the effect of that movie, especially.
Yes, 100%. I mean, but, out of any movie like that one. Jeez.
If there was a movie that warranted being in the dark and quiet, it would be that one more than anything I can think of.
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely a theater going experience. But I still think you enjoy it at home if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, you'd still enjoy it, but you're not going to enjoy it. I don't think you'd enjoy it as much.
No, it is one of those movies that this is a communal experience. You know, it feels like there's some movies that, you know, not a lot of movies these days have that feel to it, but this one definitely did. This was my pick of the creepiest movie of the year, because this movie had me creeped out the entire film, and which is really rare. Like, I was on edge the entire movie, and I do not get scared from films. Like, films don't scare me, or horror films, but, you know, you know, like, nothing, like, that's not why I like horror, you know, I'm not into, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And this movie was, like, just so unnerving the entire time, from jump to, from the, right at the beginning of the movie, you know, and the way that they executed not talking, and the way they use sound, and the symbolism in some of the scenes. Like, this movie was just so brilliantly crafted and just creepy, just so creepy and unnerving that I had to pick it as the creepiest film of 2018, hands down.
Yeah, on my list, this would have been my number two,
hands down. What ended up being number one could arguably be is creepier, but as far as the impression it left on me, A Quiet Place, you know, takes the cake. And that's why I picked it as my vote. And I did vote, by the way, on our vote here. So my voice is heard. We did it, guys. Number two. And, I mean, in the same year, you see Emily Blunt give birth in a bathtub and be Mary Poppins. What a great country we live in.
Oh, yeah, and she definitely wasn't singing very much in A Quiet Place.
She had to give birth in a bathtub by herself while not making a sound. Incredible.
Apparently there's talk of a sequel, and I'm really trying to figure out what that would even be.
Oh, I think there's a lot more to explore in this. Can't make a sound because these crazy, disgusting creatures will that can't see but can hear perfectly will slaughter you alive. I think there's a lot more to go. Yeah, great film. And, you know, if you watch it, if you haven't seen it yet and you're watching at home, just watch it by yourself, turn off the lights, jump right in there.
Yeah, make sure, like, you know, like, your kids aren't playing video games in the next room, or, you know, your significant other is, like, I don't know, doing dishes or something in the next room. You really want quiet.
Right. All right, and let's bring it home.
All right.
This film, the number one slot, won by a landslide. I don't think we've ever seen results like this. This was no contest. You guys are rapid about this film. People are losing their minds about it with 48.94% of the vote. Almost half of the votes took the number one slot. That's crazy. It's almost like we didn't even need to make this list. Like, we just needed, they just wanted to do number one. And number one is Hereditary. So you guys did it. You guys voted for it, and you got it. Now, Hereditary is a film that is, I don't even know how to begin describing it if you don't know what it is. This is the way I feel after watching it. It was like, it is at its core a horror film, 100%, but the drama in it is so heavy and so real, so that when the unreal things happen, it makes it even more jarring and unnerving. This is Shannon's favorite film of the year. She's absolutely obsessed with it. She told me that she thinks about it every day. And I believe her. But I will say that I've only watched it once. And I was watching with her, and at that point, she had seen it three times already, like the first time that I watched it. So she was kind of helping me along, because I do think it's a little hard to understand and worth repeat viewings to kind of get a feeling of what's happening. But I did have a coach to clarify some of the things.
Yeah, when you finish it, you're just like, what just happened? It's got like one of those endings where you're just like, did that really just, what just happened at that moment? I had to go online and try to figure out like theories on this.
Yeah, and luckily I had a theory spouting machine sitting next to me.
And what was really fun was afterward, I actually left an audio message to Shannon of over and over, and there was a Facebook post saying that Grant Duvall is a terrible, mean person. So I did my job.
I mean, I'm glad you brought up the clicking noise. If that's not creepy. Shannon actually interviewed the little girl for Nightmarish Conjurings, and she got her to do a click for her. So she got her own personal click from her.
Yeah, it was it's very enjoyable.
You're like, it was very nice.
It's a great movie to watch with the kids. And then go for a little drive afterward. And just kind of don't reenact anything you see in the movie.
No, you might summon a demon. So,
yeah.
All right, a lot of fun. Well, I guess we did it. We made it to number one. That's it, and this podcast isn't 3 hours, so we're doing something right here.
So, I did have a few little honorable mentions.
Of course, Grant's honorable mention. I feel like that needs to be a part of this yearly episode. Grant's honorable mentions.
I'll be very quick about it. Ready Player One for the Shining scene.
That was cool. I was actually disappointed with the film overall. I thought I would like it a lot more, but the Shining scene was the highlight of the film.
I'll say the Predator, that there were a few genuinely good creepy parts in there.
I haven't seen that one, but okay. I heard it was good.
And the Jurassic World, the sequel, there were a couple points where the movie kind of fell flat.
I liked it. I've heard it's got a real negative response. I had fun with it. I thought Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom was fun. So,
yeah. I'll say Peter Rabbit. If you watch the very beginning with Sam Neill, that part is creepy when he's catching Peter Rabbit's father.
Didn't see that one.
And needless to say, Peter Rabbit becomes an orphan after this. So I will say, you know, the first 5 minutes, Creepy Kingdom, you'll thank me. Okay. And then my top one of the year was Annihilation.
Yeah, that almost got nominated, but it just seems more sci-fi than creepy, but that was a fun film.
But my dishonorable mention would be Slender Man.
Yeah, I didn't see that one, but yeah, I've heard that was one of the worst movies of the year, which a lot of people were anticipating it because the people enjoyed the folklore of the character, but I've heard that one was pretty bad.
And the best made-for-TV movie, the creepiest one, or actually not creepy, but just most fun, would be Santa Jaws. It's a shark that gets possessed by the spirit of Christmas and wears a Santa hat and terrorizes a beachside community.
Was this on Sci-Fi?
Oh, absolutely. It was an Asylum.
I missed that one. An Asylum classic, right on. And a shout out to the people from Asylum who follow Creepy Kingdom on Twitter. So, or Instagram, one of them. So thank you, Asylum, for following us.
But overall, it was a pretty good year for some creepy films.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what this year has to bring for us.
I kind of feel like it's already going to be Dumbo for the creepiest one from all the previews I've seen. I just kind of feel like the pink elephant scene that's going to happen with Tim Burton is going to be phenomenal.
Yeah, I think it has potential. I mean, I take the live action remakes with a grain of salt. I go in pretty neutral and say, let's see what you got. You know, a live action Dumbo made by Tim Burton would not be really high on, like, some of the things I want, but maybe I'll end up loving it. Of course, we are celebrating the works of Tim Burton all year long, and we will be taking some deep dives into Dumbo after that's released as well.
So
get ready for that. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what's coming. Just taking it. There's a lot of films that just kind of, especially indie films, that are kind of bubbling up, and I don't even know about them until they come out and kind of surprise us. So just kind of go along for the ride.
And then you have this other problem where there's all these independent movies that are being made for like Netflix and Amazon and Hulu, and now we're getting a Disney streaming service, and there's now a point where there's just too much media to like really catch up on.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about series too, is that a lot of these series are really high quality stuff, you know, that I know I would enjoy, but it's just like, it's just too daunting to think to like that could even tackle them, you know, like it's just like, so I just I'm starting to give up. I'm like
how many services do you need?
Right. Well, yeah, we have them. At this point, we have them all, right? I mean, the major ones, we have Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon Prime. And now the Disney one, it seems like it's going to be pretty awesome with the original content and with the archive content that's supposed to be on there. That might be one of the best streaming services around. What is it called again?
Is it Disney Plus or something like that, or I don't know,
something forgettable, whatever it's called. It's looking good. It's looking pretty good. But those aren't movies; those are TV shows. And this year had some great Netflix shows. You know, with the Curious Creations of Christine, you know, McConnell, and you know the Sabrina show and Haunting a Hill House. Like, these are like top quality stuff that's just not on any other network, you know, as far as like creepy television goes. So,
oh, and how can we forget the fact that, you know, last year we got to say goodbye to Ash versus Evil Dead. You know, it's just,
yeah,
we're in such an age where it's like a renaissance for horror and creepy films, and there's stuff being made for all markets out there.
Yeah, that's actually the best part about all these different things, is that you can actually get exactly what you want. You don't have to like kind of settle for something that's sort of like what you like. You know, like it's, you're like, you just get exactly the kind of content you want. So I think it's kind of revolution, and it's cool. And you know, of course, we here at Creepy Kingdom, we have the podcast, but we also have our films and stuff that we're gonna keep making more stuff to fit in there. So, you know, we'll keep the creepy going in all faucets. So, as far as the Oscars go, you know, as far as the only category that's really standing out to me that I really care about is best animation. And, you know, I think it's got to go to Into the Spider-Verse, even though Incredibles 2 is what it was, one of my favorite films of last year, if not my favorite. Into the Spider-Verse is just groundbreaking animation and great storytelling. You know, so it's a real gem of a film there. If you haven't seen that one, it's probably coming out pretty soon on a home release. So,
oh, for sure.
So you'll dig it, maybe. I don't know. I don't know you. I mean, it's not super creepy, you know, but it's just as far as just being a fan of like animation, it's definitely something very unique, and the story itself really feels more adult. You know, it's not, but it's still family friendly enough. You know what I mean? It's not like R rated or anything like that, but, you know, it's not like pandering to children or anything.
I mean, Spider-Ham kind of does.
Yeah, a little bit, but, you know, yeah.
But he's endearing.
Right. All right, man. Well, creepiest film 2018. We're done. And We'll see what the next year brings.
All right, so we'll do this on the same day, right, James?
Right. Mark your calendar.
2020.
All right. We'll get 2020 should be a big year. So we'll, can't wait to get to that one either.
It'll be here before we know it.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right. Oh my. We're out of here. If you would like to contact us here at the Creepy Kingdom Movie Crypt and the entire Creepy Kingdom family, the one thing that you need to do in order to be able to do that is just email us at creepykingdom@gmail.com. And to support what we do here at the Creepy Kingdom Movie Crypt and to have access to our new show that's coming next week, live from the dungeon, as well as our full-length documentary about Haunted Mansion fans, Foolish Mortals, you can just go to our Patreon. That's patreon.com/creepykingdom. And for show notes, links to all of our social media, links to our articles, reviews, news, videos, everything Creepy Kingdom, just go to creepykingdom.com. In our next Movie Crypt episode, we will be continuing our Year of Burton celebration by taking a look back at his film, Corpse Bride. So if you haven't seen it recently, or at all for some reason, revisit it and get ready, because we're going to be talking all about Corpse Bride. All right, until next time, the crypt is closed.